Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on April 29th, 2015. I'm iRoller of Time, here alongside Rolo T. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm doing very good, Nick. I'm pretty stoked. I'm tempering my enthusiasm right now, but I am going to be seeing Age of Ultron tomorrow afternoon. So I'm pretty happy about that. And beyond that, beyond even what Marvel and the wet dream of all my favorite superheroes together combined could possibly do, Nick, I am excited because this is the last week before before May, which means we're just about upon our four-year anniversary of doing Weekly Manga Recap.
Yeah, it's been a long, it's been a surprisingly long time that we've been doing this, isn't it?
Yeah. I've there's podcasts now of high critical acclaim that like I listen to, and they're like, we're about 2 years, and I'm just like, ha, we've been doing it for four with a ninth of the popularity and attention. And I was really excited. I wanted to try to like get some special stuff in for it, like get some like cool guests, and I sent a feeler out to one member of the Shonen Jump podcast, and he said no. And I immediately was like, well, I'll just stop trying then. Which is why I'm perpetually single. Because, like, if I go up to a girl and I'm like, hey, would you go on a date with me? She's like, excuse me, I'm ordering Starbucks. And I just, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. And then I just slowly fade out of existence. Like standing like
back
there
against the wall and then, like, dematerialize through it.
Yeah, I just, like, just start to sprinkle away and go, like, bye.
Go full Shadow Cat on that.
I was just like, well, I tried, sort of. No, I'm working on ideas to get people, maybe try to get some guests, or at least get some cool things going on the show for May to celebrate it. I'm looking forward to doing some cool stuff and making it a big event. Because it's not going to be just our four-year anniversary, but we're also coming up on our 200th episode as well.
Well, those do tend to coincide if you have a weekly show, so...
True, but don't take this from me. I was super stoked these two lined up. I was like, oh, Nick! It's like the future prophecy coming together!
The planets have aligned, Nick! No, those are both based on our release schedules, so I don't think that they're...
I'm like, Nick! It's so weird! We've been doing the show for 2 years and 100 episodes is coming up!
Yes, Chris, there are approximately 50 weeks in a year.
Nick! Sorcery! A wizard made this happen! We must find him and thank him.
In terms of like the here and now, though, I'm also excited because there is so much stuff we have to discuss this week in manga. We don't have recommendation. It's going to take us a little bit longer to go through Toaru Gagaku no Railgun. But... holy shit. Big fights in freaking World Trigger, in My Hero Academia, big confrontation at Gakuhote, we got One Piece is going crazy, Bleach, something that we've been talking about for fucking 2 years has finally happened, and Naruto is back for a temporary period of time. Temporary period of time. Good job, Nick. Dumbass. And as it turns out, a lot of the stuff that we said at the end of Naruto came back, which surprises me. But we'll get into all that in our usual alphabetical order. So, yeah, let's just do this. Recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap with Black Clover, which honestly was among the less eventful series this week. And even that had a little bit of stuff going on.
Well, they've established now that not only are we... it's like a fusion now. Like, they just keep getting added into it. It's now a little bit of Magi as well.
Yeah. And, I don't know what it was, but I think that, you know, earlier this week, you were just like, oh my god, Bleach, it's happening. And then everyone, a whole bunch of people who follow us on Twitter were just like, oh, this is happening, and this is happening, and this is happening. Everyone else is also getting excited for almost every series. And someone even messaged us about Black Clover, albeit it was only to point out that on that front cover page, it looks like Noelle is not wearing panties. But, you know...
here's the thing about that. When they first introduced Noelle to us, I noticed that she wasn't wearing pants and that her outfit was not very well adhered.
It's not practical.
It's not practical. And
for
I thought.
A woman of nobility.
It's not practical for a stripper to give away that much. And I, at the time, I was like, do I comment on this? No, maybe I'm just, like, maybe I'm the pervert for even noticing it. So I just, like, threw it out of my mind and didn't comment on it. But then this color page happened, so people have seen her in, you know, full body spread in color, and people were like, oh, I thought she was wearing legs. And we got messages on Twitter, people on my forum were talking about it.
No, it turns out she's not wearing stockings, guys. Yeah,
and like, my only thought on it is, like, if this becomes very popular, this series does, I am terrified at the idea of someone like cosplaying her. Like, look, you know, like, the notion, like, oh, it's going to be so hot, you're going to get to see so much. I'm just like, no, there is no decent way to wear that costume and protect yourself. I can't see it.
There's going to have to be a whole lot of double-sided tape. Yeah, it's... I guess you could justify not just the amount of leg it's exposing, but the way that the skirt or dress or... I'm not even sure what you would call her top, because she wears the
robe. A dish towel with a belt wrapped around it?
I'm really not sure what you call her underclothing. Not undergarments, but like the purple dress or whatever. Because the robe is covering up so much, I'm not really sure what it is. But I guess you could understand, like, it's so short because she is basically a soldier and she's got to be able to move her legs around and stuff. But it's like, yeah, wear fucking pants under that, girl. I mean, come on.
I want to know, like...
It particularly does bother me because, like, she talks about her noble background and stuff like that. It's like, then why is she... That nobility doesn't wear clothing like that.
Maybe that is, Nick. Maybe this is our first glimpse into what nobility in the world of Black Clover is like. Like, all the nobles are just like, fuck it, I'm just gonna let it all hang out. I don't care. I'm rich. Oh, you fucking plebeians, you poor fucks. You need clothes to cover up your shame. I let my shame hang out because I'm so rich, I don't care. Look at my balls.
If that turns out to actually be her attitude, then I will take everything back. But I almost guarantee you it is just never going to come up. And in fact, when she does have, like, panty shots or, you know, face in the crotch moments, she's going to get as embarrassed as you would expect every manga female character who wears that type of clothing in a shonen series to act.
Oh, Nick, not every female character in a shonen series gets really upset when she has a panty shot, as we'll find out in Bleach coming up next.
Oh, God. Okay, so we join the main pair, Noelle and Asta, as they're going through a dungeon crawl, and we aren't given any context at first. They're just in this, like, ruined building, being led by Luck, one of the mages from the Black Bulls, the youngest-looking one, I think, out of all the ones that they've met. And he's kind of, you know, cheerily leading them along while they're arguing over what to name the anti-magic bird, the anti-bird that is still pecking on Asta's head. And they're arguing that, like, because Asta wants to name him Tori Taro, which is a weird-sounding name, but not as weird as Sylvantus Schnauzer, which Noelle wants to call him.
I'm definitely leaning towards Sylvantus Schnauzer.
Just because it's like, na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na- black, and also it is an emperor's name. And the bird immediately, like, teleports to his shoulder in order to raise its wing in approval. Like, one panel is pecking on Asa's head, and as soon as he turns around and says, let's call him Nero, he's like, yes! Like, immediately perched on the shoulder. No transition. Just, whatever.
That bird's pupils are going a different direction.
It is a weird-looking creature, yes.
Every time I see it now, I can't help but think that that bird's seeing something I don't.
Alright. Now, let's start a new drinking game. It's called How Many Times Can Asa Say Whoa? Just take a shot every time Asa says whoa, because he says it a fucking lot. So, Yami announced basically a flashback to explain why they're in this ruined building. Yami tells them there's a dungeon that was discovered. And Magnus is like, oh, really? And Asa goes, whoa! And then he goes, wait, what's a dungeon? Because he's a fucking dumbass. And Magnus starts to explain what a dungeon is, and he keeps on going, whoa! There's super powerful magic in there? Whoa! It's super dangerous? And he just keeps going. This is probably, like, the most annoying part of Asta to me, is that he just keeps going, whoa! It's not even a catchphrase. He just keeps doing it.
It might become one, Nick.
It's not a catchphrase.
He's like, I'm making it one, whoa!
It's like if you say, hi, that's your catchphrase. Yami says that the Wizard King has actually specifically asked for him to go scope out the dungeon, which takes everyone by surprise, and no one really understands why, you know, the Wizard King has even taken notice of Asta. Of course, we, the audience, know it's because Asta helped him out when he was disguised as the old woman in the last chapter. Yami has sent along Luck to lead Asta and Noelle because Luck's ability for detecting mana is off the charts. We get a bit of an explanation throughout this chapter that mana basically means magical power. I kind of actually appreciate that they've held on to this term until now. It's like, we'll just call it magical power for a while because that's an easy term to get behind. And then now that we know we're going to stick around for a while, then we're getting more, you know, terminology stuff. And Yami says actually that Luck would be being scouted by all the other groups of the Magic Knights, except his personality is completely busted. I have never heard of someone's personality being referred to as busted before. It's not like he means, you know, messed up. He specifically says busted several times. It's like, does that mean that it was broken from being good once before and something happened to him? I don't know. It's just weird. We get a full-page spread to establish that the dungeon is really big, although it kind of bothers me because I don't think it looks particularly impressive.
There's rivers flowing on the ceiling, Nick.
Are those really rivers? Is that really... I can't even tell.
Yeah, I think that's supposed to, it's supposed to be water. It's running water.
It doesn't even... Because I can't even tell. It's not detailed enough, if you know what I mean. Like, it doesn't look good. I don't like the artwork itself.
I've made note of the art not being my cup of tea, but I kind of like the design. I mean, there's rivers flowing off the walls. There's all these different doors. It's weird.
It looks like it's got a little bit. If that is meant to be water, it looks like it's got a bit of an Escher type of design to it. Because you look at the way, like, the ceiling, like, the water is flowing across the ceiling, apparently.
Yeah, there's doors, like, in the ceiling and, like, doors in the wall that don't seem to go anywhere. It's kind of cool. I mean, it looks strange and weird, which is kind of what you'd want out of the dungeon.
Asta says woe again, which is like the fifth time in the chapter. And Luck says that he thinks that the entire space has been warped by magic. And then he talks about mana and explains it. Asta inadvertently sets off one of the magical traps because he's a dumbass, but he takes out his cleaver and stops it with his anti-magic abilities. And then Luck just decides to be a bit of a dick because he just detects where the trap sigils are, and he, like, pushes Asta onto them, or deliberately steps onto them, and so Asta's rushing around, slashing them and disabling them, and Luck, by the end, is just like, this is so much fun! And Noelle is like, oh my god, we're going to die.
I mean, I guess this explains why he's supposedly got a busted personality. He's an asshole.
Then Luck pauses a moment to kind of extend his senses, I guess, a little bit. And then he's like, there are other people here. And he uses his lightning magic in order to make holy lightning boots. That's a weird name. Anyway, he just kind of dashes off and bounces across walls and races off by himself. And then a plant attacks them. And, oh man, it only took 11 chapters for Noelle to be attacked by tentacles. To be fair...
These aren't very sexy tentacles at all, Nick.
No, they don't even, like, try and feel her out. They just go...
No, they're just like, we're going to strain your limbs. And they're like, oh, well, this is practical of you. How dare you? You don't want to send one up my shirt? Not even one? See what happens?
We do, however, get an upskirt shot. Is she wearing panties? It doesn't look like it, which disturbs me.
They might be magical panties, Nick.
Magical panties. They only hide the most important of private areas.
they only hide the most essential of areas. It's very... You wouldn't understand it, Nick. It's a wizard thing.
Asta gets caught as well, so he can't just slash through stuff with his sword. But fortunately, Windblade magic comes out and cuts through stuff. Cut back to Yami at a very bizarre moment as he's like, oh, the Golden Dawn has sent a few people, as will be revealed on the next page and on the previous page. And Yuno is there, along with some of his companions from the Golden Dawn. And it looks like he basically has his own, like, reflection of Asta's usual team, because he has, older member with sunglasses and also female member with him.
Yeah, it was a bit bummed we didn't get Magda Swing this week. I assumed that was going to be, like, our Gray Lucy Natsu group. Like, this is just our three that hang out. They're super chumly.
I assume that that is going to be the case, but I think that they just wanted to establish, you know, like how in the last chapter they had Elizabeth, whatever the hell her name is.
Veronica,
yeah. And this chapter we've got Luck, so, you know.
Yeah.
Take a little bit of time to establish who the other characters are and have them bounce off of the two, you know, newbies. Mm-hmm.
I like this chapter on my second read-through. I think on the first one, maybe I just read it too quickly because everything felt like it happened rather quickly.
It does happen really quickly.
Because we just kind of, like, you get that first page, and it's like, hey, here's a whole new element to the series we're just introducing right now. And it's a bit...
Well, I mean, not really. It's kind of just the same thing that we've already known about. It's just called mana.
No, I meant dungeons are a thing in this world. Like, these areas that spontaneously appear full of magical treasure and they're full of traps. And, like, that was, like, a weird thing to, like, just be thrown right into, like, when that hadn't been the premise yet or hadn't been mentioned. But I actually like the idea. I mentioned that Magi did this as well. But Magi did it, like, twice, and I don't think they ever went back because they were like, fuck it, I want to be Game of Thrones now. I want to have 80 characters and none of them are really good people. They're all assholes of different degrees. So if they can...
Welcome back. Fuck Twitch. All right, yeah. So you were talking about the dungeons being introduced in Black Clover, but do you want to wrap that up?
Yeah, I just want to say, I think the dungeons could be a cool mechanic if they actually keep them as part of it. The whole Yuno thing, though, I couldn't give less of a fuck about. I just don't care for Yuno, the character.
It's funny because, like, first chapter, we were actually kind of okay with him, and it seems as time has gone by, just like, oh, whatever. Don't really care for him, it seems.
Yeah.
So, anyway, let's move on now to Bleach, chapter 624, The Fang. So, we start off with all the captains and Quincy and such. They're still trying to get to the Soul Palace. Recall that some of the Vandenreich have joined up with the Quincy's after Najgoop tried to kill Aizen and succeeded in making him go to sleep for a little while, it seems. Mm-hmm. And he wakes up this chapter. He's like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Aizen and Shun Sui have weird conversations the way that nobody has unless there's horrible sexual tension between them. And Shun Sui is like, okay, well, you know, I think that you should come with us and, you know, just wait here until the gate's done so we can go. And Aizen's like, it seems that we are joining hands, the Soul Reapers and the Quincy's, hoping to protect the Soul Society get together. And she's like, no, they just really hate you, Habak, and want to go kill him with us. So, yeah.
I didn't get that line, though, where he's like, everybody just happened to chase after you and ended up going after the enemy you strive to become. I was like, did
Aizen... He's kind of like, Juhabak did what you were trying to do way better than you did.
It's just like, did Aizen even know Juhabak? How is he his enemy?
He's met Juhabak.
Yeah, but like, he says, like, they just happened to chase after you and ended up going after the enemy you strive to become. I don't know. It was just like, everybody chased...
Aizen tried to kill the Soul King, and Juhabak has done that, so it's like, so they're going after the person that you were basically trying to be. They're going after the person in the position you wanted to be in.
Yeah, but it says, like, everybody happened
because they have conversations the way that nobody who doesn't have horrible sexual attention to them has.
Fair enough. It makes sense.
Oh
shit, we got the chapter title within, like, the first four pages of the issue this week.
It wasn't page 19 when the chapter title came up, yes. Aizen says, like, oh, and it seems as though the one who stopped me ended up entering Ryokyu before me. He continues to be so insufferable. Ichigo Kurosaki. And then we see someone's feet, and the first time that I read this chapter, I paid absolutely no mind to this. I just kind of flipped through it the way I always flip through pointless pages of Bleach. But, well, it's sort of important, except it's not. The reveal of who it is would have happened at the end of the chapter regardless of if we had, you know, shots of his feet beforehand. But thank you, Kubo, for wasting that page. Then Yoruichi kicks Ichigo into being awake.
Oh, man. And, like, the most awkward cheesecake shot right before it. I don't...
That is a tight dress she is wearing.
That is such a weird shot for this series. This has never been, like, I know Bleach has always had voluptuously, almost ridiculously well-endowed women, but that's always felt like the extent of its fan service. Like, I can recall back to early Bleach, like, the strides that Kubo went through when Rukia was, like, wearing the school uniform to be, like, she's flipping around. He's like, no, you're never gonna see panty shots. That's not my game. You know, flash forward 10 years, he's like, fuck it! I'm just gonna close up on Yoruichi's camel toe, whatever.
That is actually, I think, a strong observation. You know, Rukia was just, you know, the second main character, and then what is the most memorable thing that she has done in the last couple of years? Peach ass.
That was very true. I came across that show, I was like, that's just cheesecake. Like, and not even, like, good cheesecake. It's so, it's so weird.
I don't even know what exactly she does. Like, she seems to lift him up on the ground, off the ground, by the jaw, and kick him in the back.
It's like she's giving him a camel clutch while at the same time, like, kneeing him in the back.
I think she is kneeing him in the spine or something like that. Although he also starts to cough, so maybe she hits him in the kidney or, I don't know. Whatever. She wakes him up via violence. And so Ichigo is like, is everyone okay? Wait, why was I the only one who passed out? And Rihime is like, well, that is because... And Ichigo said, no! You can't even be useful enough to explain how things happened, Rihime. I will remember it on my own, even though I just asked someone to explain it to me. And we get this super pointless flashback that goes across, like, 4 pages in which Rihime is like, yeah, saved everyone. Even though they would have all probably been okay, even without her. She catches them when they're sent in Kenshin, and Ganju and Ichigo knock heads. But that's not what knocks Ichigo out. What knocks Ichigo out is fucking Khan bursts out of nowhere with his muscle body and causes Ichigo's head to bounce into Urihime's.
God damn, like, 3 times I've read this chapter and I still didn't get what happened. Only now, I think it's because his fucking hair is so spiky I couldn't tell that there was supposed to be like a collision there, because there's no, I guess there is a gonk, I don't know why, like, I just, like, didn't notice it, and I was like, I don't get it, what did Gon do? I mean, I still don't get what Gon did. I still don't get why seeing Gon was like, whoa!
He was hiding beneath Ichigo's robe, so when he bounces up in a huge muscle body, he causes Ichigo to fall backwards.
I failed to think that Khan has enough strength to knock Ichigo backwards by bursting out.
So Ichigo's head, the back of it goes off of Orihime's forehead. Now recall, the page beforehand knocked heads with Ganju. Perfectly fine. Knocking heads with Orihime, though, oh, out.
He's fucking concussed.
That has got to be so... I feel so bad for Rihime. It's like, your head is harder than Ganju's.
Be thankful of this, Nick. At least he didn't, like, knock into her tits and, like, that's what knocked him out.
They suffocated him.
Yeah, he's just like, passed out. And she's like, what happened? Like, nothing. Like, can I get my bra out of your teeth?
So Ichigo is like, oh, it was Khan's fault. And he goes and finds Khan, who's in his small body form, and, like, grabs him and basically just starts, like, gouging his eyes, which is kind of horrifying. And so he's like, oh, if I had my muscle body, I would be stopping. Why don't you have your muscle body, by the way? How does that work? How do you change? Oh, God. Why did you even introduce this if it's just going to be used for fucking jokes at stupid points? So Yoruichi's arm, her arm that was torn off by what's-his-face, is grown back because Rihime remembered that her powers are supposed to work. And they actually did for once. She actually healed someone's arm, Chris. An arm back.
She did. I almost forgot that Yoruichi lost her arm because it happened, like, a couple chapters ago. And the first time...
You don't process these things because they're not important.
Yeah, and then, like, the first shot we had of her this week was her ass. So I was like, oh, okay, she must be fine. Like... You wouldn't sexually exploit a woman who was just recently crippled.
I do actually like the continuity that that her... Actually, no, that's not good continuity. What am I talking about? Her Ime, her power rejects events, so even her sleeve should be back. But it's not.
Tom, where you go, Nick?
God.
Riley, you better catch Koopa on Twitter while you still can.
Fuck you, Koopa. You and your stupid arm thing, and also forgetting. It's like the two most annoying aspects of Bleach combined into one event. Orihime's uselessness and arms getting torn off all the time. So Ichigo is like, maybe we could get back up to the Soul Palace if I use spiritual pressure to make a foothold, and then we could use Chad and Orihime could get there using Sendikishin. And Yorichi's like, no, don't worry about it. Okay, open the fucking Garganta thingy. And it starts to open up, and it's fucking Grimmjow's there!
Oh my god, Nick! It's happening! Grimmjow!
It happened! The guy who was supposed to probably show up 2 years ago showed up now. And Ichigo reacts to this in, like, the most Bleach of manners by going, you're Grimmjow!
He's like, I know.
Yes.
Thanks.
Yes, he is, Ichigo. It's Grimmjow. His name is Grimmjow, in fact.
Look, it's not like, you're alive, or what are you doing here? It's like, you're Grimmjow, like, as opposed
you're
to...
You're Grimmjow!
Yeah, very, like, bluntly, like, matter of fact, you're Grimmjow, and you're Chad, and that's a dog! Like, he's just pointing at shit.
Ichigo. My name is Ichigo, and I am 17 years old. This many years old, he has to take his shoes off.
He's counting on his fingers, and he still fucks up. I'm this many, Ichigo, that's six.
Oh, God. So yeah, Grimmjow's back. It's about fucking time that something that was alluded to actually came to pass. God. It's not like it was even... God. Nothing important happened between then and now to make the time that we have waited for this payoff to be worth it.
Well, Nick, let's not say that. We did see Mass Demasculine. That was pretty huge.
Oh, yeah. If we had Grimmjow before Mass Demasculine, totally would have been...
He would have fucked him up. No, and I'm super excited. Nick, do you think next week we'll get Ganju and fucking the rest
Ganju's
of the Fullbringers? Yeah, like we'll get the rest of the Genji? What was the fucking Fullbringer's name?
Ginjo and Tsukishima and Clock Guy, who nobody cares about.
Watch, dude. Yeah, like I hope they all show up next week and Kubo's just
and we're
like...
we're here too, guys.
Kubo's just like, I need to throw all of you in at once.
Ichigo immediately cuts Clock Guy in half.
I think this happened, I was so excited, because, like, it's Grimmjow! They finally brought him back after teasing him. And now I sit here, and I'm just like, what is he doing? Like, what advantage does having him, like, come provide? I assume that they're like, look, he's here. I guess we can also use his big toothy teleport thing to just get back up there, which...
They're just going to use the Agile...
kind of invalidates the past, like, 6 months of them trying to build that fucking portal in the Soul Society.
He's like, I've given up on, you know, becoming the strongest of all of the Visored... not the Visored, the Arrancar. I'm just basically a taxi driver now. You know, I take people from place to place and do nothing else.
Yeah. But you better pay me.
Yen is also Huecomundo's currency.
You pay me in hot dogs and fucking hair gel. Bone mask polish. I don't know what the fuck Grimmjow is going to do. I'm just happy he's finally shown up. That's really it. I like when I saw it happen, I was so excited. I can't process why I'm excited. I can't think of a single thing Grimmjow is going to do.
Something happened in Bleach, and we have less telling us that there is still stuff to happen before Bleach can end, I think.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Not to Fairy Tail, because Fairy Tail was not being officially released for a little while yet, so whenever we get to it, we're going to cover extra chapters and stuff. So, going to be a shit ton of Fairy Tail to talk about when we do that. As I believe we were discussing before the podcast, is basically screwing future us over.
Yeah, I'm really giving a big F you to the Christopher 2 weeks from now, being like, enjoy 4 chapters of Fairy Tail, asshole!
It's like a month, jeez. Okay, but, so we're just going to move right along to Food War, Shokugeki no Soma, Chapter 116, The Fruit of Personal Growth. So, as it turns out, we were discussing this last week, you know, trying to figure out, I was like, so is there a third week of Stagia? Are we going to actually follow Soma? And I said, no, we're probably not. As it turns out, we were mostly correct. Basically, there were 2 weeks more of Stagiaire, skills tests, and we're not doing any of it. You just get a little bit of a montage for some of the other students, which I think is fine. You just, like, get through it, basically establish, yes, there were 2 weeks more of this. It was an even month instead of a weird 2 weeks, or weird 3 weeks, I guess. Which, honestly, knowing that there's Jokugeki no Soma anime, maybe that's kind of, like, laying the seed for his, like, if you need an excuse for filler, here you go.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, I don't know if Shokugeki no Soma's anime is going to hit 116 chapters worth of story. Who knows? Anyway, so we get some discussion between the fucking... I used to know this guy's name back during the fucking tournament, but I've forgotten it now. The head counselor, basically. He's talking with some of the other teachers, like, oh, there's 2 weeks more, we've got 504 first-year students at the beginning of this year's program, and I wonder how many will remain by the end. And he says, yes, however many fail, so be it. Those who cannot overcome this challenge are not worthy of aiming for greater heights in this institute. And we get a whole bunch of little snippets from assorted people that someone's encountered. First off is Kurokiba, who basically has taken a restaurant full of punk chefs and basically disciplined the fuck out of all of them, which is kind of amusing. Like, this one guy with a mohawk shaved his head, is like, yes, I will be nice and stuff, type of thing. Really creepy smile from one guy, one of the other chefs in the place. Look at that guy. You can see his gums. That disturbs me. Let's see. And basically,
yeah, you can't have.
Yeah, it's
cool. Are those characters from the series?
I think that there's. They might. I think they're supposed to be. They're from the Polaris dorm, but I don't know if we've actually gotten any actual focus on them. I think we've just seen them maybe in a few shots. Maybe they'll be more important characters in the future as someone has more people to challenge him and so on. Okay, then we get. I wish I could remember this guy's name. He is the brother of one of Soma's rivals, whose name I also don't remember. They do Italian-style shit, basically.
With distinct gimmicks.
Yes. And they also have this, like, weird... oh, yeah, we do see him. Aoki is in the... What is he? Does he actually say... When was he introduced? He has, like, cameos and, let's see, blah, 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 reveal, blah, blah, blah. Most amount of chapters between his debut and having his name revealed. So they haven't had anything revealed about them until this point, but they're setting them up for the future, I guess. Anyway, we also get a little glimpse of some failures, which I like. And there's this woman, one of the assessors, who, you know, the guy defends himself by saying, I did every single task that was given to me without making a single mistake, and I've given a whole bunch to this restaurant. And she says, well, during peak rush hours, while the whole kitchen was at its busiest, you never once thought to check on anything not directly concerned with your given task. What you've done can't be called a true accomplishment. Instead, you seemed far more interested in bragging about how you were working at a starred restaurant than in reflecting on your skills. Not only that, you complained about your fellow staff on social media.
I like how shocked she's like, you saw that? Like, of course they did.
This is, like, a very important lesson for anyone out there who has no experience.
Never tweet about your job. Never, ever, ever tweet about your job.
Never tweet about your job. God.
Unless it's, like, a hilarious anecdote. Like, poop myself at work today, teehee. Then it's probably...
Hilarious anecdotes and positive experiences that do not give away something that, your employer would not want given.
Just but never, like, nuts. My boss is such a fucking see you next Tuesday, if you know what I mean. I hate that guy. And you're like, well, maybe this is why you're not liked at work.
Right. I see stuff written on here. I'm the best chef here, like, can't...
Oh, wow, and actually...
Everything I do, ugh. I wish that they... I can't read it, it's so small.
I wish that guy just shut up. Something chef here, like, don't stop nitpicking everything I do, ugh.
Wow.
Dude, this place works you like a slave. Wow, I didn't actually think it was in English. I thought it was just, like, really...
I didn't notice that earlier, yeah. Usually that kind of thing, you just kind of assume that it's still in Japanese. So, well done. Yeah,
very big props to the editing team behind Food Wars. That's very impressive.
Okay, I did bring it up, okay. Then we also get a look at Ibusaki, Super Bangs guy, who hasn't gotten very much focus yet, but before the Stagiaire skills test, they actually kind of gave him a little bit of focus, kind of foreshadowing his involvement. And so one of the older guys at the restaurant said, you know, thank you for everything. You know, with this restaurant was on its way out of business, but it's back on its feet again. So I'll talk to the Institute for you, and, you know, I'll explain everything. I won't let them fail you, I promise. And he says, I'm not going to give up, damn it. Let me use the kitchen again. I'm going to beat this. So not really explaining what's going on wrong, but, you know, just showing his determination to continue on. And we also get a little scene like that with Megumi, who asks at this Japanese-style place if she can be taught how to be a hostess. And they're like, oh, come on, you know, don't do that. And she says, no, I want to be able to help people outside the kitchen, too, expand my skills. And then, and I think my single favorite moment, God, I've forgotten her name. Meat Girl, is in fucking forest with the guy that she's been assigned to. Guy's got, you know, super white beard, and he's like, I have one skill I have spent my whole life refining, my ultimate roasting technique, and you are fit to inherit it. My ultimate roasting technique.
He spent his whole life refining. That's some fucking dedication.
Oh, God.
But I think back to it, I'm like, I think I'd give everything to learn how my fucking grandma made Texas sheet cake. She had an amazing Texas sheet cake, and now I'm just like, oh, she must have spent years mastering it. And she's like, no, it's a...
Got it out of this recipe book.
Yeah, I got it out of a recipe book online. I'm like, they had internet in the 60s? Yeah. We didn't talk about it a lot.
Well, you know, my family has just found stuff like that, but then the dishes have, like, become standbys at family get-togethers and stuff, so I still think it's important to keep that stuff around. You know, it's a little bit of a tie to, you know, your family's history and stuff.
Yeah, I mean...
Even if it did come out of a cookbook, it's like, yeah, but this is a tradition we made our own.
So. I think my mom knew the recipe until she got all stroked out, and now it's like, Mom, what? How do we make Texas sheet cake? Strawberries!
Like, that's a secret code. I just put loads of strawberries in the sheet cake.
I'm like, there were never strawberries in the sheet cake, Mom. You're crazy.
Lots of students fail, but none of them are important, so whatever. Then 2 weeks have passed. Soma returns to the Polar Star dorm, and he's the first one back and is greeted by Fumio, the dorm mistress, whatever the fuck you call it. And she says, you got lots of mail. And there's fuck tons of challenge letters sticking in his mail slot. And she says, yeah, you got a whole ton of Shokugeki challenges. And, wow, really? This many? And some guy with a super chiseled jaw bursts through the door. And he's like, oh, Soma Yukihira, you have returned. I challenge you. I am a second-year student, Tetsuji Kabutoyama. And I have watched your performance in the Fall Classic Finals. And I wanted to test myself against you, so I challenged you to a Shokugeki. I am called the Iron Skewer. Chicken, beef, fish. I can cook and season any ingredient you name in ways you've never seen. A Shokugeki warrior. I have won over 80% of my matches. There's just this fucking panel of him, like, with fucking Wolverine claws. Oh, God. I love Shokugeki no Soma. And he keeps on going on this whole long... diatribe, you know, bragging about himself while Fumio says, yeah, you know, this is kind of different because second years get to challenge you now. This is the end of the period when first years can only battle amongst themselves, so you're going to be opened up to all these other people who are going to be gunning for you because of the attention you garnered in the tournament. And so someone's like, okay, I guess I'll take him up on it. And he's like, all right, great. Well, then we have to decide we're going to do it. How about next week? And someone says, no, let's just
do it now. Right fucking now, dickhead. Well, he doesn't get that angry.
He also says to Fumio, I will accept every single last one of the challenges I got, so don't toss any of them away. And he says, you know, there's a whole ton of stuff I've been dying to try for real, so thank you for coming by, senpai. So what are we going to do? What's our theme going to be? Come on, what are you waiting for? Let's do it. Pick something. And Tetsuji thinks to himself, from the beginning of the Fall Classic Finals, I've sensed something different, something unique about him. But the look in his eyes now, he's a completely different person. And someone says, come on, let's get the Shokugeki on right now. And he's got this big glow in his eyes going on.
And he's gotten a lot hotter.
Well, confidence is sexy, Chris.
Yeah, well, he did. I'm not, you know, that's not my wheelhouse. But I feel secure in being like, dude, got a lot studlier. Like, I kind of like, I'm now imagining, like, maybe I'll take, like, a sabbatical from my real job and, like, go off and try to find, like, my passion as a chef solely because when I return home, it'll be, like, a lot hotter. I'll be like, oh, man, I fucking know now that I'm really good at making cheeseburgers. And all the ladies will be like,
You come back home, you've got your backpack slung over one shoulder, and you got this cocky smirk on your face. Yeah, oh, it's so much hotter.
I'm like, guys, I'll put peppers in my cheeseburger. Ugh. And they're just like, whoa, he's so amazing. He knows himself so well.
And the chapter ends on the final line of, the pebbles are gone, only the diamonds in the rough remain. Now, the true training begins. So, sort of opening the next chapter, I guess, if you will, of the Shokugeki no Soma saga. So, next step forward, I guess, for someone to take.
It is a very cool chapter. I like, you know, showing the different growth of these characters. Obviously, there's so many characters right now in Shokugeki no Soma, they couldn't possibly have shown us all of them throughout the week. But we got a glimpse of basically most of the ones we really know, you know, of any kind of intimate way, at least that I know of. And it's kind of cool to see little glimpses of these different people and then ending it with this idea of like, yeah, we didn't show you what happened those last 2 weeks, but you saw the important thing is Soma now has an idea of what he wants his cooking to be. And because of it, he's now inspired. He's reinvigorated. He has all of this passion, all of this creativity, and he's just going to go for it. He's going to accept every single challenge just because it's another opportunity for him to continue exploring and growing. And it's such like a cool character moment where you're like, oh, that's great. And it is, like, I know I was joking, like, oh, he looks hotter now, but it is, like, something about the way it was drawn. This is, like, a character you're like, this guy seems a lot more wise and mature now, like, a little bit more respectable just from a single full page spread of his, you know, it's not even like it was a time skip, you know, or anything like that. You were just like,
yeah, it's a month.
Yeah, it's been two weeks.
Two weeks since we last saw him. Yeah.
Yeah, but you're just like, now I'm selling like this seems like a different character, not different, but like this seems like a drastic improvement happened.
And so, you know, one of the great things about Food Wars is that element of, you know, you get put through this rigorous test, and if you don't make it through, you're just gone. So as you see, you know, even just the one character go through stuff and come out the other end and he's fine, that lets you know every single other character that is sticking there alongside him, you also know they're getting better and they are the real deal and stuff. So, you know, seeing the evolution that Soma has gone through, just imagine every other character that we haven't seen come back yet. It's great that we get this initial focus on just Soma, but the chapter also buys time to let you know, by the way, you know, when Megumi comes back, she's going to have been through a whole lot of stuff and improved herself. Kurokiba's going to have improved. Ibusaki is going to have been improved. Every single person that Soma's competed against before and hasn't gotten to compete against yet as well is going to be even better than they were before. So things are going to be great, I think.
Yeah.
I look forward to seeing the evolution, basically, of the series. But for now, oh boy. Fortunately, you're going to handle most of the talking, I think, this week.
I'm going to have to handle... I'm officially passing the judge off to you, though. I know I had a great performance as on last week, but...
you had, like, three lines. I mean...
the term legendary was thrown around a lot, but I'll lend them off to you just to get someone else off there. But yes, Kakuhotai.
All right. Let's start this off with, a dim memory of a day long ago.
Now, Kojima, I've told you not to bully Inugami! Wah! Wah!
Yeah!
What a weird thing to say.
I'm trying to think how our voice... Hey, Obaku, I got yelled at again because of you.
Grumble.
Eep! Eep!
You want to fight? Yeah!
Start fighting. An effective kid fighting, just waving their weapons in the air, not anywhere close to each other. I'll take this. Hey,
line.
I know it's a center bar to blot out whatever they say, but yeah, I know.
It always goes hazy at that point. I get so close to remembering, but I can't.
Oh.
Missing no.
What were you saying?
I gotta figure out how to do the baby voice.
Order! Order!
What the fuck is that? It's a walrus?
I was going for, like, yelling old man. Apparently he's a walrus now.
He's like fucking...
Line after that, though.
Oh,
and wait, I gotta do the hammer. Okay.
And who?
I hereby call this classroom session to order.
The heck are you?
Chapter 20, The Key. Yui Kojima, prosecutor, 144 wins and 0 losses versus Abaku Inugami, attorney, 61 wins, 24 losses. Diagram, rough diagram of Tenvin Elementary Courtyard. Fuck, I'm not saying all those words. Who cares?
The victim is Reiko Shiratori, age 12. She was struck in the back of the head with a blunt object and is currently in a coma. She was found inside the animal shed, which at the time, with its door being locked, was in a so-called locked room state. You can't see what I'm doing air quotes, though. Like, to show that she's, like, aware she's doing jargon. And the person holding its one and only key was the accused, Tento Nanahoshi, age 12. As the lock yielded no suspicious fingerprints or evidence of tampering, this was the deciding factor in the indictment.
Before I go on, I just want to say, I love how they keep on saying age 12 and stuff. They're all the same grade.
You're all the same age. Stop it.
But if the accused is the perp, why create a locked room stay? I'll just cast more doubt on him.
No! What's important is not the reason, but the fact that only the accused could have done it! Plus, that morning, no one witnessed the perp take the key out, so he may have been planning to return it amidst the confusion to further muddle the investigation.
That's because the teacher wasn't in the factory room.
Do not be fooled. By the time the times ring, Tento Nanahoshi's brutal two character shall be revealed. Prosecution seeks the severest punishment, that he be transferred to Onigashima Elementary.
Kojima's a born bully. I've heard when her sadistic nature crosses a certain point, she strips off her robe to reveal her bondage outfit. So we've already reached that point. Yes, yes, Abaka, we have already reached the point of that ridiculous amount of fan service. Yes.
Oh, I will not hold back against him. I'm going to go at him full throttle right from the start.
Exclamation point!
Well then, step forward, defense witnesses.
Speaking of which, where's teacher?
Oh, yeah. Plus, that student transfer ninja boy.
You're just like keeping a beat. Oh, God. Defense witness number one, Eisuke Uozumi, Tento's friend. Right alongside the mystery of the locked room murder, we have the missing deadly weapon as well. What was the object that struck the blow, and where did the perp hide it? This was one of the riddles of the case. That is, Uozumi, until a metal bat with your fingerprints on it was found on the rooftop of the school building. Dot dot dots. First of all, is that your bat?
Ellipses. I refuse to answer that! I don't want to say anything!
Very well. Then let me switch witnesses, because you're such a prick.
You're a dickhead.
Eh. Higashide, would you tell us the details of the bat's discovery?
Sure. I don't know if you need to read his...
Defense witness, 1.5. Fucking 1.5, what the... Shuichi Higashide, class president, / children's police undercover officer.
The bat was just laying out on its side, bare in the shadow of the rooftop water tower. Uzumi's fingerprints were lifted from the middle area of the bat. Due to the fabric wrapped around it, it wasn't possible to recover verifiable prints from the handle. By the way, there was no blood residue on it.
Well, considering how little Shiratori was bleeding, it's not totally surprising that there wasn't any on the weapon.
I see! In short... Your argument is that Ezekiel Uozumi assaulted Riko Shiratori with the bat and then hid it on the rooftop afterwards.
No!
I never heard Shiratori.
That's right. Sorry, Obaku. That bat isn't Uzomi's.
Smirk!
It belongs to Tensa Nanahoshi.
How is she talking like that with her tongue that far out?
Well, let me try it with that, like, in that pose.
It belongs to Tensa Nanahoshi.
You literally can't pronounce Nanahoshi with your tongue sticking out. It is literally impossible. Ellipses! What?
A metal bat isn't something everybody possesses, but since Nanahoshi just happened to own one, the boys of the class often played ball in the park and such using Nanahoshi's bat, though they supposedly stopped doing so after hitting a ball through someone's window a while ago. When I alluded to that homeowner's statement during my questioning, the accused eagerly confessed to it! That's an outright lie! She did horrible things like eat food in front of me and I think kicked me in the dick!
It says boots, so I assume that is what she did, yes.
It's very crazy.
She even, like, strapped his feet up, too, to, like, no way to cover up, too. So that's Kojima still.
Yes, that's why it's not surprising for Uzomi and the other boy's fingerprints to be on that bat. Actually, perhaps that's why the accused chose it as his weapon, having remembered that, in order to place suspicion upon his friend.
You're saying it was that premeditated? You gotta be kidding! Stand away like that!
But he is! Have you forgotten the Suzuki murder and dismemberment case? Regardless of it being threatened, he is criminally guilty of committing a false murder. Imagine it, the sight of him dissecting the fish. Even if a dead store-bought one, all alone in the classroom after school. I bet the bones are firm. Blood seeping from the flesh. Hands taking on a fishy smell. And then he tried to deceive the class, boldly claiming, I didn't do it without wavering at all. That is this boy's true character. Tensa Nanahoshi is an ogre, masquerading as innocent.
Silence!
Everybody! Oh, this is just the beginning. No data about him exists at all from prior to the spring. During this session, I'm going to strip off every piece of hypocrisy you've wrapped yourself around.
Silence. Alright, shall we move on to the next witness?
She's broken everyone's spirits just through verbal abuse. But forget that. The real shocker is that the bat belongs to Tento. Why do you hide such an important fact from me, Tento?
Defense witnesses 2 and 3. Pretty idol, Airi Takanashi, and her friend, Kuniko Hatakayama.
This is information confidentially obtained from a certain source, but I hear the two of you often practice the choreography for new songs up on the overhead passage in the morning.
What?
Oh, okay. Hang on. I gotta prepare myself for this one. It was difficult.
Yep. That's right. That morning of the incident, we were going over the steps to Airi doesn't overstuff herself.
That appears so. For that morning, Tento, after opening the animal shed's door, chased after a runaway rabbit, and ended up running into the two of you descending from the overhead passage and exiting the school building. He stated that you both seemed flustered with Takanashi even in tears.
Crying? You have any proof of that? As for being flustered, it must have looked that way, because we were out of breath from having just run down the stairs.
I see. So let me ask this. Why was there a need to rush down like that?
Ellipses.
A noise.
A noise?
Yeah. As we were practicing on the overhead passage, we suddenly heard a crashing noise, like something had been smashed or broken. Exclamation point! That's why we came down, to investigate it.
About that day?
Yeah. Anything at all you remember? Also, ellipses.
That's right! There was this noise.
Noise?
Yeah, around the time I left the courtyard and caught my rabbit food.
Clunk!
From the courtyard, a sound of something breaking or shattering. I wonder what it was.
That coincides with what Tento said. But that day, not a single window had been broken. In fact, you didn't find anything, correct?
Yes. Other than the Happy furiously barking toward the animal shed.
Fucking dogs.
And then we discovered Shiratori. Although at the time, with just her legs visible, we could only tell that someone was lying there.
Exclamation points!
So you two were the first on the scene. Plus one other. Uozumi was there too.
Exclamation point! Times two!
On our way to the courtyard, we found him carrying a broom. Then the three of us noticed the oddness with the animal shed. I see. Thank you very much. No prob.
What's Obaku trying to establish here? A broom can't inflict enough harm to put a victim in a coma? Plus, those three couldn't have pulled off the locker room chick. The perp still has to be tense or not enough.
Sarutobi. Yo!
No, no! Attorney Sarutobi mustn't be tardy!
Oh, forgive me, Your Honor. I'll make my way to the gallery, sir.
Okay. 2 minutes prior to the session. Sarutobi, could you go look for something for me? If my theory's right, if you look around the... You'll find the... So, it was as I suspected. Thanks, Sarutobi.
What's this sensation? As soon as Sarutobi enters the room, my head suddenly...
We're all going to prove our innocence and get out of here together! Don't look, Kojima!
So Dog, Monkey, and Fazinar decided.
Hey.
Memories flooding back into my brain. Why? Wait. This face. This face is...
I don't know who's the narrator.
Just as Kojima was reaching the edge of oblivion, without a glance at her head agitation, a Baku Inugami had set his trap. All riddles solved. The truth about the missing weapon, how the scene could be a locked room, and the whereabouts of Red Ogre in this classroom. The Reiko Shiratori attempted murder case. I'll rompa the hell out of it! Abaku Inugami would later state that the identity of the perp in this case was the saddest one yet. Hello from Abaku Inugami! Send it the fucking thing that you think happened.
Show it, bring in the answer. That'd be great if the fucking author was just like, I didn't plan something, so you guys figure this one out.
And the deadline, I guess, is going to be on basically the day that the last chapter comes out for people to say what they think happened, basically.
It's an interesting thing. I almost wish this was something they'd implemented sooner, of like, hey, kids, you know, send in what you think the answers to, you know, the twist to this is and see if you're right. I thought that'd been maybe something cool to kind of pull people in.
I think that the problem with doing that is that the way that the series has been structured is that it's been like 3-chapter-long cases, mm-hmm. So it's not really enough time in order to, you know, allow for that thing. And the only reason I think it's doing it at this point is because there's, you know, the week off next week.
Mm-hmm. And it's also the fact that Zian's, this is kind of a big one to be like, you know, what's A to B? There were times they would do this, I think, in Phoenix Wright, too, where they'd specifically avoid saying, they'd be like, but there was a certain object there. Instead of just saying what the object was, they just have to...
Such a Japanese thing.
Yeah. fucking Kingdom Hearts, that goddamn one in Kingdom Hearts 2. Like, oh, we can't say the word... like, somehow the word photograph got stolen. So they were like, where'd the word go? We can't say... It's just like, God fucking... This is the stupidest thing in the world.
Well, I'm not really sure on all of the details, but I can only assume that the incident actually occurred, like, near the doghouse, because Shiratori, you know, is very close to Happy, mm-hmm. and that was why Happy was barking, and then she was, like, dragged to the shed somehow. I'm not sure. I have no clue who is responsible or anything like that, but you have any ideas?
I have one idea that I feel like it's not gonna work. I don't know why. I feel like in some way she locked herself in there. Hmm. That she got hit in the head or something like that, and with her remaining consciousness, something like that, she locked herself in there. Because I feel like that's like a clue that's out there that's just not being picked up on, that there are two keys and she had one.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's going to play an element in it, but honestly, like, I don't know who the culprit. The way I want to say it is that Tenho is, like, the Red Ogre, but I think that's because I want this to have, like, a Stealth Symphony-esque ending where the main character turns out, like, just goes crazy at the end.
Well, I mean, he says that, you know, it was the saddest one ever, and that does seem to imply, like, you know, someone who I thought was my friend, it turns out was a crazy, you know, murderer. That would be fucking sad. Yeah. But, you know, like, all the people in the class, like, you know, every single one of them has been made out to be a pretty decent person, and basically...
Yeah.
I don't know, you know? It is one of those things where, like, I wish I could figure it out, but I just can't. And also one of the things that did occur to me is the fact that they found Shiratori face down and covered up and stuff. Is it possible that she wasn't the person who was originally laid down there?
That's another thought I had when they know, like, oh, we only could see the legs hanging out. I mean, that's another factor that could be playing a part in this.
What if it's somehow related to Pine? For example,
because you also have to think about it. I mean, there's not too many people who could have done that pose because she was wearing shorts and it was very clearly a female's body. So it's not like it was, you know, Owako, whatever his name is, like posing for it or something like that. And people are like, you've got a very shapely rear. Like, that's like the hit we should have picked up on. Like, you ever notice all those kids talking about how hot Owako's ass is?
What the fuck is Owako?
Whatever his friend is. I can't remember their name.
Uozumi.
Whatever.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, we'll find out in a couple of weeks, I guess.
Yep. But... good chapter.
Yeah. Let's move on to...
My Hero Academia!
Yeah. Let's do that. Conclusion of a really big fight in this chapter. It was going on between Todoroki and Midoriya. And this chapter opens up with Endeavor getting incredibly excited about the fact that Todoroki has finally started using his fire powers, and he stalks down through the audience. He's like, oh, you finally accepted it, and you've stopped rejecting me, and now you can fulfill all my ambitions, and so on. We get the chapter title, number 40, Emancipation, as Todoroki is not really paying attention to Endeavor for once, but, you know, of course, as Endeavor comes down and basically demands his attention by shouting really loudly, making a big show of himself, Todoroki just says, you know, basically isn't even paying attention to him, rather. I'm getting my order mixed up. He does take notice of it later. But he says to Midoriya, you know, you've got all those wounds and so on and so forth. You know, you must be fucking crazy to be smiling right now, considering that you're kind of screwed. And he says, it's not my fault what's going to happen now. Midoriya, basically starts getting ready to tear his fucking body apart in order to use his powers. Todoroki uses his fire powers at last, and some of the teachers are like, this could be bad, so let's get ready to intervene and stuff. They have this one huge clash in the middle of the arena. I think that they both send out variations on a blast. They're tearing up the entire arena between them. This explosion ripples into the sky, and smoke goes up everywhere, of course. When the smoke clears, Todoroki, his uniform is torn up a bit, but he is still standing, and Midoriya is slumped outside the ring against the wall, so he's been knocked out of bounds, and Todoroki advances to the finals. A few people in the audience, you know, take notice of the fact that Midoriya still put on a good performance. Todoroki leaves. This is where he finally notices Endeavor, because he fucking stands in front of him, and he says, ah, so you've finally ended your childish rebellion! You must work at my side after you graduate. I will guide you down the path to supremacy. And Todoroki says, I didn't put anything aside, actually. It's just that in that moment, I just forgot all about you. And whether that's good, bad, or something in between, that's something I'll have to think about. And then he just kind of walks past him. So, fuck you, Dad. You know.
Midoriya gets cool line there, though. I do like that. Like, I just forgot about you in that moment. I don't know if it's good or bad yet.
Midoriya gets taken to the recovery girl's office. His friends come in to see him. He's fucking body casted up, basically. He's got his arms tied closely to his body and so on. And recovery girl is talking to All Might, who is just kind of staring down at Midoriya kind of quietly. And she says, you know, this is this is not good. You know, he's not going to be easy to peel up because his right arm is completely shattered. I've got to remove the bone splinters from his joints and then use my ability to heal him. You know, he admires you so much that he is willing to destroy himself. You lit that fire. You moved into this, and I don't like it. I think that you and this boy are overdoing it. So you had better not praise him for what he's done. And I really liked that, you know, because All Might was all over about, you know, Deku is going to take my place and so on and so forth. And now he's faced with this idea that this kid is basically killing himself, and it's kind of his fault. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. That's kind of like a dramatic edge you don't actually normally see in this type of series, I don't think. Midoriya's friends burst through the door. Let's see here. Basically, they're just kind of like all... They freak out over him for a little bit, but they pretty shortly... Recovery Girl pretty shortly escorts them all out. But before they leave, Deku says, you know, I couldn't do it. Maybe if I just shut up and I could have won, but I had to say what I did to Todoroki. And All Might finally speaks up. He says, you were trying to bring it out of him. And Midoriya says, yeah, I mean, it was too sad. I couldn't just sit by and mind my own business. At that point, I couldn't take it anymore. It was so frustrating. I forgot why I was there, and I lost myself. And he apologized to All Might for losing. And All Might, after Recovery Girl has shut the door and, you know, locked his friends out, he says, it was an unfortunate outcome, and calling you a fool won't change what happened. However, giving help that's not asked for is part of what makes a true hero. Aww.
That's a fucking awesome. Like, come on. Like, this was such a great chapter in the sense of, like, first off, it's cool to see a series that's going to be like, hey, you know, your protagonist has already, like, shown himself to be, like, kind of like a wimpy kid, but, like, we're actually going to do, like, we're going to show, like, he's in this big tournament with all these rivals, and he only gets to the second round, and then he loses. But in losing, you know, he showed himself to be a true hero because he desperately wanted to help someone else in need. And you can even see, like, from just what we've seen in Todoroki this chapter, he's made a change for the better now. You know, who knows what the path will take him, but he's spurred him out of a spiraling circle. And it's great. Like, that is the trait you'd want to see in a character, you know? It's not his strength that makes him an admirable hero. It's his heart. That's what got him the position in the first place.
And it's interesting the approach that we've gotten in this, basically, this tournament arc. Normally, a tournament arc is all about, you know, I want to win so that I can get X or so that I can prove I'm the strongest. Whereas this whole thing has been about being a student at this academy is not all about being the strongest. You know, being a hero does not mean, you know, being the strongest. It means having the qualities to be a freaking hero. And we've gotten that from Deku, from Uraraka, from Todoroki, from Deku's first opponent, whose name slips my mind currently. And I think we're also going to get a little bit of that from Bakugo, because he's getting character development as well in this. So it's very interesting that it's taken that completely different approach to a standby of Shonen Action series.
Yeah, it was just a really kind of interesting way to establish this. I presume we're still going to see the rest of this arc. And I imagine that now Todoroki versus Bakugo is probably going to be our finale, which is a very interesting dynamic now, seeing, like, you know, those are two characters who kind of came into this arc with still having anti-hero-esque tendencies to them. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens when the two of them clash. But it was a really excellent chapter. It's just a lot of great storytelling, a lot of nuance between these characters that go deeper than what Shonen Jump series usually get. My Hero Academia is fantastic.
So many series this week chose great points to leave off of going into the week off, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. And then Naruto.
Oh my god. Naruto! Naruto's back!
Did you guys miss it?
I did not know how much I missed it until I got this chapter, because holy shit, this actually legit impressed me. I was completely surprised that this story took such a logical turn. So Naruto, basically this kind of post-series kind of side story, it's called Naruto the Seventh Hokage and the Scarlet Spring. Naruto number 700 plus 1, because whatever. Uchiha Sarada. Sarada, of course, being Sasuke's daughter, seemingly Sakura's daughter, but well, we'll get into that. We start off the chapter with Shino addressing the class and saying, you know, you guys are going to have your academy graduation exam early next week, so you got to be prepared for it. Some of the students are having various different reactions. Who the fuck is the guy sitting next to Bolt? Who is that supposed to be?
I feel like I should know it, too. Like, I feel like he's on
fucking
my head.
Fucking blue-haired dude?
Is it? I was going to say the bone guy, but I was like, why would his kid be in the class?
No, he was dead way before he entered the gene pool.
I was like, where did I even think he had a kid? Because he kind of resembles... I feel like he resembles somebody, and I'm just...
He must resemble someone, and I'm going to see if I can find this information as we go
through. Oh, Suigetsu, maybe?
No!
Why not? Why can't he have a kid?
No! It can't be.
Something would fuck him, I'm sure. Or he'd had sex with a fish and it produced this. I don't know.
Let me see if I can find this. Shikamaru. Shit. No. No, no.
People suggesting Orochimaru's kid. Why would... I mean, Orochimaru didn't have a kid.
He does... Honestly, he
does
look like...
He does have the eyes, though.
He does honestly look like he might be related somehow to Kimimaro because he's got that same weird pale skin tone. But God, I don't fucking know. It's really bugging me because I don't even think that this guy showed up in the last chapter of Naruto.
No, I don't believe he did either. And I don't think he shows up again this chapter. He just happens to have the misfortune of being in color and sitting next to fucking Naruto.
Who are you?
Boruto. Also, am I mistaken? Or when they did the final chapter of Naruto, didn't they call the characters Bolt and Salad?
Well, Salad sounds fucking stupid, so I'm not going to say that.
Well, Boruto does not sound much better, because it sounds like I'm fucking doing, like, a parody.
No, I was like, I'm fine with doing either Bolt or Boruto, but I'm not doing Salad instead of Sarada. That is fucking stupid.
Every time I hear Boruto...
Everyone who has anglicized Sarada as Salad is like, no, fuck off, I don't care if they're both plant-related.
Oh, they change. It's just why every time I hear Boruto, I think it's like a parrot. Like, I'm like, yeah, Naruto's son, Boruto. Like, he just made up a word on the spot, like, Shmaruto. Yeah.
Okay. It's my original character, Boruto.
Yeah, Boruto, don't steal him.
Who the fuck? Okay. Let's just see if we can, like, run this down real quick. Konoha 9. People whose kids haven't been revealed. We've got all of Shikamaru's team. We haven't seen if Tenten's got a kid, but it doesn't look anything like her. It doesn't look anything like Kiba. Doesn't look anything like Lee. And we've seen Lee's kid, or Lee's apprentice, at least.
Yeah. We haven't seen Shino's kid, I don't think, but that doesn't look like Shino.
It doesn't look like, because his eyes are fully visible and yellow eyes. This is gonna bug me until we get this information. And when it does, it's gonna be like, of course it fucking is them.
Alright, well, I'm gonna do a mistake. I'm gonna type blue-haired kids in Naruto.
Blue-haired kid in Naruto. So, Sarada, meanwhile, as everyone's having their various reactions, Sarada's just like, who gives a shit about becoming a fucking shinobi? Who cares about being a ninja? Even the word ninja sounds lame. Which, what kind of kid are you, guy? She walks off after class. She's with Chocho, Choji, and Karui's daughter. And so she, who is, by the way, all depressed because she has to have drills with Choji for the graduation exam. So Sarada says, yeah, you know, you should go train. Don't skimp out on that. Choji does show up and embarrasses Chocho because he's got snacks and is, like, yelling over to them and is embarrassing her and stuff. And Chocho is not as much annoyed by the embarrassment of this as the fact that he has the wrong type of chips.
I would like to perpetuate that Naruto is selling us a lie here. It would not matter if Choji is eating lightly salted potato chips as opposed to barbecue potato chips. Those are still excess calories he doesn't need. That's a lie that people believe will help them lose weight, that eating the healthier version of snacks will do it, but it simply
doesn't. Light diet soda.
It simply doesn't work that way, guys. I'm sorry, but this manga's a lie. This art has no truth to it.
Bolt has apparently vandalized Mount Hokagemore again, but apparently this has succeeded in drawing out Naruto's attention as they're having a bit of a sparring session although Bolt actually manages to successfully dupe Naruto with a shadow clone and continues chasing him around and stuff. Sai is also observing this while teaching he and Ino's kid some art, you know, ninja techniques and stuff. By the way, he draws cutesier style things instead of Sai's more traditional type of art. And he refers to Sai's art as being old-fashioned. Sarada kind of sees all this stuff happening. She sees Bolt hide in this, like, sandwich sign thing. And then when Naruto comes across her, he's like, "Have you seen Bolt?" And he's just like, "He went that way." Misdirects him. Shikamaru and Shigeta come across them, and Shikamaru scolds Bolt by saying, you know, if you actually went serious and went Super Saiyan, well, Sage Mode, whatever, he's like, we would find you really quickly. And he's like, yeah, well, we're just, you know, practicing, you know. But Shikamaru apparently just like, I don't have fucking time for this, as he, like, uses his shadow binding to hold him down. Just like, God, what are you doing?
You got shit to do, kid.
It's like, you know, if you keep him busy like this, you know, you're also giving trouble to me because I'm his advisor and stuff. Although he says, but, you know, it's not like Naruto didn't act similar to you back in the day, I guess. And he sends Shikadai to go and find Naruto's shadow doppelganger, which is actually chasing after Bolt because the real one is in his Hokage office doing important shit. But at least he is technically spending time with his kid.
By proxy.
And the point of all of these different meetings, you know, between Sai and his kid and Shikamaru and his kid and so on and so forth, is the fact that they are all bonding with their fathers, which Sarada has never done, as we knew.
Wait, hold on, Nick. Are you saying Sasuke is a complete fucking deadbeat?
Well, I don't have to say that. The story says it
for She me. Basically says it like the next page. She's like, what the fuck?
She, you know, like, just is thinking to herself, she, you know, goes back home, and she looks at this picture, which has, you know, her as a kid, and then her as her as a baby, and then her as a kid.
How old are these kids supposed to be? They're, like, what, 12?
Around 12, yeah.
I don't know why. She seems giant to me. Like, she's standing, like, against, like, a desk and a TV, and she looks like, you know, perspective's part of it. I feel like she's taller than the TV. I feel like this is, like, a 5'9" teenage girl. Or, like, not even teenage girl. Like, fucking preteen girl. She's gonna have a great future in the fucking basketball.
Maybe it is bad proportions, honestly. Because, I mean, I do think that she should be fairly tall. You know, girls get tall faster than boys, but not that tall. Eh.
Well, maybe TVs in that world are only, like, 7 inches.
So she looks at this picture that's, you know, it's got pictures of her as a kid and then picture of Sakura and Sasuke, although mysteriously with a split between the pictures.
Ooh, Nick. I got a response from Professor Jump as to who the blue-haired kid is.
Ooh!
And he says, you'll have to wait until next chapter.
Fuck Sorry. Off!
His name is Mitsuki, though.
Mitsuki, okay.
There you go.
Naruto Mitsuki. Mitsuki. Shaggy, shoulder-length white hair. Epilogue, blah, blah, blah. Damn! Fuck! No information on Narutopedia. Oh,
well. Anyway. Have you tried the one that has Gintama characters on it, Nick?
So, basically, she's looking at, you know, pictures of her father, and she thinks to herself, for as long as I can remember, I have never even met him. Fuck off, Sasuke! Douche! Then we cut to a little further ahead as Sakura's outside, like, doing laundry or something, and Sarada asks her, did he used to wear glasses? And she's like, what? I want to know if Papa used to wear glasses or not. And Sakura says, I don't think so. And Sarada says, so you don't know even though he's your husband? Well, your dad wasn't home a lot back then. Well, he's not around a lot either. And Sarada just flat says, are you really his wife?
The one thing I want to know is, like, she starts off, like, with actually, like, a really easy question. Like, I want to know if Dad wore glasses or not. And Sakura's like, well, I knew him since he was 11. And presumably earlier than that.
And I was obsessed with him as a child.
Yeah, I was a stalker can't remember if you ever wore glasses at any point. Like, it was like a pretty easy question, so I could have been like, no, and Dev would have been like, maybe that would have appeased Sarada at that point. She's like, oh, okay, Mom must have really loved him. She knew he didn't wear glasses.
Sakura gets defensive because she takes the more, you know, accusatory tone. Like, were you actually married? And Sakura says, you're acting all weird. Why are you asking all these questions? And Sarada says, what's weird is your relationship with Dad. And, you know, it's not just a little weird. It's really weird. So just answer my question. Sakura fucking punches the ground with their super strength. She's like, ah, Sarada! I'm sorry, I raised my voice and threatened violence against you. Because Sarada's fucking starting to cry! She's a 12-year-old kid starting to finally question her place in the world. Just like, I just want to know stuff about my dad, who I've never fucking met before. And Sakura's like, I'm sorry, I almost killed you with my super strength. And she says, no, I'm sorry, your dad's just on a very important mission right now. I'm sure he'll be back as soon as he can.
The same mission he's been on for the past 13 years? Ish.
And she says, our feelings are connected, so don't worry. So I was like, how can you say that with such confidence? It's like, yeah, it sounds really lame. I'm with her on this.
It's like, this is the kind of magic of relationships that really should die when you stop being a teenager.
Yeah, really. But, you know, that's Sakura for you. However, Sakura fortunately gets out of the conversation. Unfortunately, it's because the strength of her punch has caused a tremor to go through the ground, and it causes the entire house to crumble. And she's like, oh no! The loan isn't even paid off! And she faints. God.
Now, apparently, I was reading in chat earlier, that is an established character trait of her. That I guess they introduced in like a filler arc or something like that, and it's just
good, a filler arc.
Apparently it carried
it's
through.
Always reliable for establishing character traits in the original source manga.
Apparently when Sakura uses her super strength, she passes out afterwards. I don't know why. Like, the first time I recall her using it was against.
Her reaction was, you know, in shock at the fact that she had caused their home to be destroyed.
That's what I assume as well. I'm going off what the chat told me. They could be wrong. They could be lying to me.
I'm going to assume the chat is wrong, and she just had a pratfall.
But, yeah.
I have to wonder, though. Sakura is, for all intents and purposes, a doctor, right? She is a super skilled medical ninja.
Yes.
Is it just that because war is over, there is no call for her skills as a healer? Because you would think that would be, like, the only skill from wartime that would still apply to today. How is she still, you know, strapped for cash?
I mean, you'd think that just the fact that she was, like, one of Naruto's best friends, he'd, like,
yes,
pay off her house.
Friend of the current Hokage, student of the previous two Hokage before him. How is she ever, like, strapped for cash, basically?
I don't know. She's managing to get by. I mean, look,
this
could say
you get for being lamer than Naruto and Sasuke, basically.
I would be able to get behind it on the notion of, like, look, she's this very gentle, caring person who, when she had a child, she pushed those things aside because it was more interesting. It was something she wanted more, was to be a primary caregiver and nurture a child. And she you know, didn't pursue a career in medical, medical ninjutsu or whatever because of it. I could grasp that. It's that Sakura and all of her, like, logic here is so bat fuck backwards, and I'm just like, now I'm starting to not think you're as admirable of a person as we'll find out in one panel or in one page from now.
It's nice to know that her temper tantrums have not gotten any better as well.
Yeah.
So Sarada basically contacts Shizune, who, you know, basically takes care of Sakura, and so she's nasty. Why are you going, by the way? You know, I've called the contractors about your house, and she says that, yeah, there are some things of sentimental value that others might not realize, that, you know, they might dispose of them. And so she goes searching through the rubble, basically, finds the picture that she was looking at before, and the frame has broken it, and reveals that the picture of Sasuke next to Sakura is actually two pictures that have been taped together. Oh, God! And the picture is actually, like, of Team Snake/Hawk/whatever they were last calling themselves. It's, you know, Sasuke and Suigetsu. And Karin is standing next to Sasuke. And we, just to drive the point home, go from a panel of Karin directly to a panel of Sarada after she says, with glasses. And they're the exact same fucking type of glasses. So, just to drive the point home here, everything we discussed in fucking November of is Sarada really Sakura's kid? I think that Sasuke might have had the kid with Karin and just dumped her out there. Those are all plot points that are being brought up now.
Did we suggest that?
Yes, we suggested that it might be Karin's kid.
People have been, like, giving me so much credit this week, like, Chris called it! And I was like, I don't remember saying that.
Well, I don't know which of us called it. I know that I definitely suspected that, and if you brought it up first, I definitely wholeheartedly agreed with you. But we were definitely discussing it kind of jokingly, because we assumed it was just a happily ever after, and we're never going to discuss it again. No, turns out, all the stuff with, you know, Sasuke just not being there for his kid, and also potentially Sakura not being the mother, maybe it's actually Karin. It's not all necessarily true, but it is all being discussed
as
from
an
in-character perspective, which I think is great, actually. I'm looking forward to seeing how the hell Kubo actually deals with this.
Now, interesting. What I will say, though, is Sakura seems really, really unhealthy in this.
Yes,
because not only, like, is she never admitted what the true parentage of her child is. It could be her kid. I mean, it could be. But what's really weird to me is, like, she made a family photo, but, like, she didn't have a photo with her and Sasuke, because apparently at no point in their loving relationship they could take fucking picture for 2 seconds. So she took a picture and then took a photo of herself, presumably on a similar enough of a background that it would look like they were in the same room.
Well, those backgrounds are white, Chris. There's nothing behind them. They're both in the abyss.
But in the context of the world, you have to assume there's some kind of texture or color to it. Like, it's not like they both just happen to be, like, in an empty void. There had to be some way she matched them up to look like they were in the same place. That's a level of psychosis, Nick. She is truly unhinged.
I mean, it is weird. I mean, I'm sure that the explanation that we'll get may not be entirely satisfying, but I think that for now, if you consider the idea that, well, Sarada is 12, you know, I think that maybe it's a little bit too late for Sakura to have, you know, not discussed the truth with her, but it's that it's still a young enough age that you can understand that she still hasn't yet. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this gets explained, because I thought that this was stuff we were never going to see. I actually really like the stuff post end of the main story of Naruto that we're getting. Brings up a lot of the stuff that we jokingly complain about, but it's kind of stuff that maybe that would not have fit in with the main story. Like, you know, the movie that came out last year, how did Hinata and Naruto actually fall in love and get together? It answers that question. How is Sarada still actually going to be mentally healthy without a father figure there? Well, we'll find out this time. And apparently there's actually going to be another movie that focuses on this generation of kids as well. So, a lot of stuff I think that is actually kind of interesting is extra material.
And what's kind of interesting to me, I think what I'm most excited about of this is the fact that Sarada seems to be, like, the main character of this. At least her plot is thus far the driving one.
Right.
You know, Bolt's Boruto is going to be having some kind of relationship with his father. He'll deal with that, and I'm sure he'll get involved and be a protagonist in his own way. But right now, the story seems to be about Sarada, and that's kind of cool to me.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I mean, she has a Uchiha, so I inherently hate her and her bullshit magic eye powers, but still cool.
Our friend Jeff, when he read this chapter, I saw him tweet, and he basically said, Toby Ramo was right. They should have just killed all of the Uchiha, because now she's going to start shit because of all this.
She's just going to be like, I lost my dad, I'm going evil, it's in the eyes, bye!
Crying blood! let's do this next One Piece. Chapter 784, Gear 4. Although, before we get to that title thing, we get shots of people fleeing from the birdcage, which is not cutting through everything in its path. Some of the buildings are too tough to be cut through, so it's just kind of being... they're just kind of being dragged along by the birdcage, which is actually kind of cooler, I think.
And there's actually a little part of this. It doesn't get focused at all, but I thought it was really cool. In the first panel, we can actually see, like, you know, people being helped out. And there's, like, small stories here that aren't going to be focused on. But you see, like, a pirate rescuing an old woman.
And yeah, like, there's a pirate right next to a marine doing the same thing.
Yeah, and there's a marine pushing an old guy with a chair and a child hanging on his back. Like, I just think that's, like, really cool small details to add into your world. Because as a reader, I'm just like, oh, what's the story behind that? It doesn't matter, but it's inspiring to make the world seem bigger than just Luffy and Doflamingo are fighting over there.
Yeah, disasters can have a way of bringing people together like that, so... Mm. And we get a few exchanges between, you know, actual characters and stuff, like, you know, Baby Five saying, like, this is the true terror of the bird cage, honey, to Sai, and she's, like, internally going, ah! God, time and place. Viola is also kind of recapping everything, because she's got her, you know, super vision ability and stuff, so she knows that stuff. And they're like, oh, where should we go? You know, wouldn't the plateau be the safest place, because it's the center of the kingdom? And they're like, no, look above us. The center of the cage is actually slowly shifting because the center of its compression must be all over the palace, where Doflamingo is now. So that makes things, you know, more difficult because you can't just run towards one location. As Luffy punches the guy around, you've got to get closer to him and follow him around and stuff. So Usopp, of course, panics a little bit. But Zoro actually starts to rush off along with Kinemon and Kinemon's samurai friend, whose name I forget. And he's like, so Kinemon asks, where are we going? And Zoro says, we're going to stop that thing.
Like,
I love Zoro's comments, though. We're just going to stop it. a little bit of a shot of Cavendish talking with Law. And of course, they're not moving because Law has refused to move. And so Cavendish is like, you know, I hope that your arm can reconnect. You know, if the blood flows again, it will recover soon, they said. And Law says, yeah, I know. I'm a doctor. Well, fine.
Oh, look at you. Oh, no. Looks like someone ripped your arm off again. Ow! Just tears it off.
And Cavendish says, you know, I had an epiphany when I saw the underground trading port. Even if Doflamingo is vanquished in this battle, great waves will spread throughout the world. You people will be the eye of the storm. And Law says, yep, that's the plan. Just a fucking, yeah, yep.
I'm aware.
And so Luffy is going Gear 4. And Doflamingo's like, what the fuck is that? Luffy kicks off his sandals for this shit, and he announces Muscle Balloon. Basically, he summons Armin Haki around all of his limbs, and similarly to how he uses Gear 3 to just puff up one part of his body, he specifically applies it to the muscles in his arms and legs. And he also, of course, his chest in general also puffs up, but there's focus on his muscles. And he jumps towards Doflamingo. I don't know if he looks cool or ridiculous or both.
It's definitely both.
Yeah. He calls himself Bounce Man, so I don't think he can not look ridiculous.
And he literally cannot stop bouncing. Like, if he like every time he hits the floor, it's boing boing, like he just keeps bouncing back up. It's an interesting design, because he gets bulky, and a lot of people are like, he looks fat, and I'm like, it's less fat and more just the fact that he's very round, and his legs don't size up in proportion with the rest of his chest. The thing that's weird to me is he gets eyeshadow, and it makes him look like Kumadori from the CP9 arc. Like, he looks like a Kabuki actor.
It does look kind of weird.
Like, and he also gets, because his arms and legs get surrounded with it, and I guess it's just that the chest doesn't get covered. Like, he puts arm manaki on his limbs, but not on the chest, so that's why, like, it looks kind of like there's tattoos. Like, that's the haki just, like, slowly coming to an end. But right. It is an interesting design. It's goofy, and it took me, like, a read or two before I was, like, completely bought into it. But...
Well, it's a weird set of things that happens, really.
He redeems it basically immediately. Like,
because
just, like,
he just punches the fuck out of
Like, he fucking hits Doflamingo so hard, he goes flying, not just out of the building, he goes flying across the goddamn island in one punch.
And people are surprised, like, what the fuck just landed? It's like, holy shit, it's Doflamingo! He just fell from the sky! And they're like, what are you doing here? And he's like, that's what I want to know!
What the fuck just happened?
It's really weird stuff because Luffy, like, his arms, like, when he's throwing these punches, his fists sink back into his arms and then just propel out, like, spring-loaded guns, basically. And he then catches up to Doflamingo by using the springiness in his legs to propel through the air and fly.
It is pretty ridiculous.
I mean, he can already fly because of his UFO technique, but this just seems way cooler. And then he just does this super drop kick with all the momentum he's built up and kicks Doflamingo again, and then bounces across the ground to catch up with him again, and just punches Doflamingo again and again and again, and he sends his arm on this weird trajectory as well. It keeps on bending through the air in order to connect with Doflamingo's jaw for his last shot. Also one note is Doflamingo tries to use that athlete technique again, and he realizes that even though Luffy has reinforced his body with armament, he's still rubber. So flexibility and armor, I guess, combined.
It's interesting.
And then he punches Doflamingo, which is satisfying.
It is interesting, because I was very curious to see how this is going to play out. Now, there's been a lot of reactions to this chapter. You know, some people have been like, this is ridiculous, doesn't make sense, you know, it breaks the rules.
It's One Piece!
Some people are like, it breaks the rules of even the world it exists in. But I feel like there's things we don't know about this yet that are going to be explained to us. Even Doflamingo seems to be hinting at something about to happen in this, you know, at the end of this. He's like, why isn't he shrieking? You know, we're about to see that there's going to be some drawbacks to this. We just haven't seen it yet. And I'm curious to see the haki, how that plays into this. Like, how he can have armament haki but still be rubber. Like, I guess haki still just hasn't been completely defined yet, so I don't know all the rules to it. But I'm curious to see how that does apply to this. But I'm
assuming that basically the combination of abilities allows both of them to do things that they normally cannot. Like, his arm and haki allows his body to retain this shape, and his, you know, rubber, the gum fruit, allows the armament to be flexible. So
It was a very cool chapter. Like, I think visually his powers are awesome. Like, I love just the shot of seeing his hand compress into just the folds of the rest of his arm as he just basically, like, spring-loads his fucking punches. I thought that was extremely awesome, and I could see this being a cool power for the future. I imagine we'll at some point get a Gear 5 or something like that. I can't imagine this is, like, the final form, but it was still very cool here, and I'm curious to see what's going to happen with Doflamingo turns us around, because I firmly believe Doflamingo hasn't shown us his full capabilities yet. I feel like something's going to happen. He'll take down the birdcage, and that'll give him the string he needs to do something else.
Ooh,
because yeah. I think back to the fight against Lucci, when Luffy revealed Gear 2 and Gear 3, and yeah. Lucci was still kicking his ass. So I feel like Doflamingo's going to come back from this.
Well, and they also showed the drawbacks to those abilities, because, mm-hmm. you know, Gear 2 exhausts him, and Gear 3 turns him into a little kid.
Yeah.
So, the only explanation we really get for his abilities is just, you know, for 2 years, I was training by fighting wild animals, and I just had to develop this technique in order to overpower them. It doesn't say what it happens, but he just does it. So, I mean, yeah, we'll see.
Yep.
Torgo,
real quick. Fucking everyone's dead. It was live.
There are tits. Everyone's reacting to the tits. Apparently they haven't bothered coming back because they wanted to have conversations with the people who were dead. Some guy who's... Who the fuck was this guy? Who cares?
He was introduced at one point, and he did apparently knocked out him and Goemon, and they just seemed to be so knocked out that they were dead.
Yeah, we're fine now. They're like, okay, you can heal now. And like, yay, we're back alive. And then they have this whole conversation about how Komatsu has gourmet cells. And everyone's like, whoa, he's got gourmet cells? He's like, yes, he has gourmet cells. And they've awakened and so on and so forth. And then we end on the joke that Zonge looks like Bambina's old bride. And since he has eaten from pear fruit, he's got, you know, tits. So he looks like a female ape. And so Bambina is basically going to go and have sex with him now and carries him off.
Hold on, there's actually something, but there is a ridiculously huge thing that supposedly comes out of this where they're like, because of your revival, Komatsu has gourmet cells. And
yes.
The logic behind it is that Tepe, who we thought is evil, actually purposely cut out Komatsu's heart because his heart wouldn't be able to withstand the strain of having the gourmet cells in them. So he destroyed the old one
and revived a new one that could handle it. Yeah.
Yes, and that's why they had to go on this hunt to get Pear so that they could retrieve the new heart that would go into Komatsu and give him gourmets, you know, allow him to utilize these gourmet cells, and he has a demon inside of him as well. And what I love is that Toriko, after hearing his explanation, is like, fuck that. I still don't like Tepe.
He's like, he attacked Komatsu, you know. I can understand that, you know, approach, you know, Chin is like, yes, you know, he trusted the two of you that you would be able to do this, and Toriko's like, no, fuck that guy.
Toriko's like, fuck that asshole. You should have told me his stupid ass plan.
He's like, well, he couldn't technically while he was right in front of the other member. He was like, fuck him!
Fuck Tepe! he has the spare time to create a new fucking heart in the back channel, but he can't fucking tell me what his plan is? No, F that guy. He can tweet me.
We have to use that tone of voice every time that Toriko gets pissed off.
He's like, come on! What an asshole!
So I think that we should all forgive him. No, fuck that guy!
Fuck Midoriya! I don't care if he was a fucking tiger man.
Alright. World Trigger now, Chapter 101, Yuma Kuga, Part 12. Flashback, Yuma having a conversation with Replica, and basically just talking with Replica, and complains like, I haven't been able to sleep in 5 days. And Replica says, that is because your body is made of Trion now, and, you know, the Black Trigger supplies Trion to your body, so you don't need rest. So, you know, look on the positive side of things. You have way more time to be active than other people. It's like, yeah, but I'm bored.
I like to sleep.
Which I totally understand that. It's like, you know, if you have fucking 50% more time to burn than anybody else, you'd get bored too, trying to think of stuff to do.
Especially, yeah, during the time when everybody else is asleep, generally.
Yeah, no one to spend time with and stuff. So, Rupka says, alright, you know, on nights like this, Yugo would review combat theory, so why don't we do that? You know, knowledge and logic aren't absolute, but it will help you to think on your toes. And so Yuma says, what, you mean I should review alone? No, with me. You know, if you want. He's like, yeah, let's do that. And we cut back to his fight with Midori Kawa in the present. Midori Kawa still has the... not Midori Kawa. Fucking... Midori... Murakami. There's so many Mido and Mura and names in this series, I'm sorry. Murakami comments that Midori Kawa is faster than him, so it doesn't matter that Yuma's using the grasshopper to jump around and stuff. He can still keep up. So Yuma's forced to retreat. Commentators keep on talking about stuff, and they also switch over to the other side of the river, and Osamu tells Chika to get into a position where she can get a good visual of the bridge, because Suzunari is no longer using his bagworms, and so they no longer have to watch out for him. So, yay. Chika runs off. Kuruma and Taichi are still forming their shield to hold back Natsu's bullets. And so he says, so should we like keep on trying to get away? He says, no, let's get closer. We should put pressure on her and get her on the defensive. If we move any farther, we will be too close to the river. Amatori is already scoping out Ko. And if Natsu also gets into the mix, Ko won't be able to safely cross over. Ko being Murakami. So they're like, alright, so we'll just push Natsu back, wait for Murakami to get over here, and then we'll take advantage with our numbers. So they try and use the buildings for cover, and Taichi's like, okay, let's go. But then Taichi realizes that the bullets that Natsu has launched after them are slower, they're different, so he immediately warns Kuruma, shoves him away, and the bullets break through his shield and take him out immediately. Taichi is knocked out. And Kuruma realizes, oh shit, composite bullets! And they explain that it is Captain Natsu's tomahawk, a combination of the Viper and Meteor, which Tachikawa goes on to explain, because basically the disadvantage to using the stronger ones is that they take time to form and they can't be used uniformly. And this is illustrated with a chibi Natsu making a duck face, rubbing Viper and Meteor together, and just going mush, 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 mush. Which looks way more fun than it probably is. It's the, ooh, energy.
Mush, 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 mush.
So silly. So Osama's like, oh, that's happening fast earlier than I thought it was, but I hope that we make it in time. And we cut back to the attacker showdown between Yuma and Murakami. He keeps on approaching the bridge, and so the announcer's like, is he trying to escape? But we get a flashback to the reviewing that he's been doing now, actually on his own, basically having conversations with Replica by just imagining what Replica would say. And it's really kind of sad.
That's like such a fucking, like, I love that scene of like he's talking to Replica, and you could tell it's not like, oh, Replica has some, you know, extra connection with him, and he can still talk to him. Like, no, it's clearly him imagining the other end of this conversation, because a lot of it is very simple responses or, like, quotes to things they've already kind of talked about before, and he's closing his eyes the entire time, so clearly he's imagined it, but it's such a...
I love the visual of, like, the blank white space in the shape of Replica where he would be floating by Yuma's side, and he's not there.
Such a well-done scene. Like, just... when they can make Yuma interesting, or Ashihara does it, it's just one of the most effective parts of the series. Like, this absolutely just got me into him, when you're just like, that is like a tender little thing. And I miss Replica. I'm like, he's a fucking robot. He doesn't do a whole lot, but damn, I miss that little guy now.
Well, that whole, you know, invasion arc, you know, really drove home how important of a character in his own right he is.
Mm-hmm. So. Really well done here.
Also, I really like the importance of this. Reminding, you know, Yuma is made of Trion. He's not like other people. He doesn't need to sleep. Murakami's side effect allows him to learn while he sleeps. Yuma is getting the advantage back by learning without sleeping.
Mm, like, that Nick. Is...
yeah. IR smart. So yeah, he's, you know, basically just reviewing stuff, preparing for his showdown with Murakami, and then we cut to the present. Murakami manages to cut Yuma's leg off, and, you know, it basically is just imagining what Replica would be saying as this is going on. We'll think of all the ways to bring down the opponent. We have the time to think. And if any one of our ideas can catch him off guard, we can finish him off. And so it seems like Murakami's going to finish off Yuma. The announcers are like, he's going to use another grasshopper. Is he crossing the bridge or aiming to counter? And Tachikawa says, no matter what he does, Murakami will sink his teeth into it. And suddenly... Murakami steps onto a grasshopper that Yuma has set in place. It propels him up into the air. And they're like, what the fuck did he just do? Yuma dashes up after him again. They have a clash above the air. And they're like, oh, but, you know, at this distance, though, Murakami can just use his thruster and then he'll just, you know, drive himself onto one of the fragments of the bridge while Yuma falls into the river. And nope. Chika blows it up. Oh, I love this. So they both fall into the fucking river. And their assistants provide visual support. They have a fucking underwater clash. Yuma uses a blade in his foot. Murakami's not used to fighting underwater. He gets caught, speared through the chest. His Trion supply is destroyed, and he is forced to bail out. Well, holy shit.
This is a badass fight scene.
I guess we were kind of wrong about that, too.
Now, to be fair, I think I changed my thing once Jin said he thought he knew which way it was going to go. You always side with Jin, I found out.
That fucker, but yeah. Murakami did manage to secure a point but from Kumagai, but he's forced to bail out, and Yuma gets a second point himself before being washed out of bounds by the flow of the river. I mean, he's only got one arm and one leg, so they say, you know, he can't fight the current with that, so that's it. He's out of the fight as well. And I believe that they did establish at some point a way that points were gained from that, but I'm not sure.
They said he will be washed out of bounds. I don't know if by that happening, if he can bail out on his own and protect the point, or if
right.
The point... I have to imagine that's what it's going to be. Because it seems like a weird way to, like, give a point back to Murakami as well.
Otherwise, they shoot us like, oh, his Trion is leaking out and he's going to be forced to bail or something.
Yeah,
else.
Like, because it's, what, 60 feet difference from people? I have to imagine he's 60 feet away from anybody else and you know, remaining that's not on his team, so.
Right. And so, yeah, they say it's like, yeah, you know, Kuga is basically out of the fight as well, so it's down to Eiji Damatori and each team's captain to clinch the deal. And so, but NASA's just thinking to herself, okay, I just got three more points to deal with. While Kuruma's going, oh, fuck!
Shit!
But this is going to be interesting. Look forward to seeing the next chapter in a couple of weeks.
It's what's interesting to me is, I thought this battle would be primarily about showing Chika and Osamu, like, proving themselves, and I thought, you know, Yuma would get countered here, but Yuma actually came out ahead in this. He got 2 points at least. You know, he did his time well, so I'm really curious how this is going to end, because we've built up Nasu as this threat. you know, Chika and Osama are the only ones left on their team. Like, do they come out of this with a point? Because the whole point of this little battle here was to show that, you know, once they reach A rank, once they go out in the neighbor world, they're not always going to have hours to prepare against their opponent ahead of time. They're not always going to be able to study them and know their weaknesses and things like that. They have to be able to react. So it's very key to actually see if Osamu and Chika can actually triumph in a situation where they were forced to react instantaneously.
Well, and also an important thing to remember is that one of the aces is among the people who are left. You know, Nasu's saying, okay, I got three more. The kill that she's already secured plus three more, I think, gives her team the lead pretty easily. So, you know, she's still capable of winning. Kuruma's got the point that Urakami already secured, so he's capable of still doing stuff. And but it is still a matter of, like, okay, one of the best people at our level is competing against us. Let's see what they can do against her without Yuma to help them out.
Mm-hmm. So. Interesting stuff. Very curious. I am excited to see next... well, not next week, but next chapter.
Yeah. Well, that is going to do it for a Weekly Manga Recap. So thank you, everyone, who joined us for the live recording. Usually we do it on twitch.tv/RealLT, but sometimes, like today, we have to change things up, change where we're streaming, change the time, and so on and so forth. We usually do it Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, but make sure to follow us both on Twitter. He is at RealLT, and I'm at YRuler of Time, and we'll tell you when and where we're going to start the show if you want to listen to it live. Also, be sure to check out past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com. And be sure to send us criticism, questions, and suggestions in the comment section or email them to us. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com is the address you should be sending those to. And help us out with a rating and review and stuff like that so that we can beat woodworking podcast assholes, basically.
Now, we don't know they're assholes.
Yes, but I've gotten used to saying that.
I feel like we're going to alienate ourselves.
If I stopped calling them assholes, then they wouldn't know how special they are.
I worry that if we call them assholes...
I'm calling them assholes because they're our rivals, Chris. You've got to hate your rivals, don't you?
But, like, we're eliminating the opportunity to have a crossover manga woodworking podcast at some point.
That is never going to happen, and you know it.
Look, it seems like at this point I have a better chance of getting the woodworkers on our podcast than I do of getting the Shonen Jump guys on our podcast, so maybe that's what a way to jump in. But no, we also did get a review from Josh G88, 5-star reviews, is beating your woodwork. I look forward to listening to these two every week. I'm not really met much of a manga reader, but these guys are a lot of fun anyway. So interesting that we have someone listening who's not really a manga guy. He must just love our witty commentary about things he presumably doesn't understand.
Special thanks go out to Steve Mann, our talker artist. You can check out his work at neuroticfanboy.deviantart.com and idropboobs.tumblr.com and patreon.com/Steve Mann. And for the visual editions of our podcast, special thanks go out to the Infamous Planet and Felix Dark 2. You can check out their YouTube channels for the videos that they've made using our podcast. So we're not sure if we're going to do anything next week for Golden Week. Just, you know, keep an eye on our Twitter accounts and we'll say if we do. But in a couple of weeks, we will be back to talk about Tuaru Gagaku no Railgun.
Yes. So that's pretty exciting. I don't know what we go out on. I thought I had something. Then
what do you think is going to happen in Age of Ultron?
Well, there's going to be a robot. I'm pretty certain about that.
Obviously, only one robot singular. There will be no more.
No, I'm predicting maybe upwards of a dozen robots. Maybe. I've watched no trailers, so I'm guessing off of this. I'm hoping Captain America does some cool stuff and they don't make him look super lame like they did in the first Avengers movie.
I have heard that his he doesn't get a lot of character focus, but I mean, if he gets to do cool stuff, whatever, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know.
He also had one of the more recent Avengers movies, so.
Well, I mean, all of them within the past 2 years, when you think about it.
Wasn't his the most recent though?
Guardians was the most recent. Then it was.
That's not an Avengers movie.
Well, he's the MCU, but when you think about it, Thor was only, I think, what, like, 5 months before Cap, 6 months before Cap, so it's not like they're that far apart from each other. And Iron Man 3 was only, what, a year before that, so it's not like they were that far away.
The Black Widow movie was, oh.
That's the other thing. I'm banking on, or at least hoping, to do something to make Black Widow look cooler than she does in all the trailers, where the only thing she does of importance is pick up Captain America's shield and, like, whip out her electric sticks and be like, look, I'm badass. I'm like, nah, you need to actually do something to
but
be badass.
On, but come on, man. I did that thing in the group shot where I was leaping with both my guns pointed.
I'm like, well, that's good. Do you do something with your guns? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I probably shoot some of the robots.
Those robots are pretty big. I might just hang out in the back.
I'd probably take down one at a time.
Yeah.
Very slowly, while, you know, Thor electrocutes 500 of them at once.
I'm very methodical about this. You know, I take out... Look, I took out that guy, and I kicked and knocked that other robot's head. Yeah, I know Hulk just grabbed a bunch of them and smashed them together into a big ball he just hurled into the sun, but I'm an important Avenger, too. Without me, how would they seduce all the guys and go on spy missions?
It's that thing that people observed about Batman before, you know, he got all, like, basically they made him seem like the best thing ever, was, you know, it was like, whenever he got into fight alongside the rest of the Justice League, he's like, he would do this whole intricate thing to take out one enemy, and Superman just, like, picks up five of them at once and starts juggling them. Why are you here, Batman?
What do you serve? What are you really here to do?
Is there a mystery to solve? I'm the world's greatest detective. No, they're robots. We have to destroy them.
Yeah, is Darkseid? Are you trying to figure out the identity of Darkseid? Oh, spoiler alert, Batman. He's fucking
Darkseid.
He's an asshole. Now, those of us with real powers will go try to stop him. You stay back here and make sure no more fucking parents get killed so we don't make more of you little losers hanging around. Superman away.
That's gonna do it for Weekly Mug Recap. Bye!